Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dead Frog Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to learning the ins and outs of stand-up comedy. Today we're going to be talking about Larry David's monologue, well, stand-up monologue on SNL, I think about a year or two ago. If for those of you who don't know who Larry David is, he was the co-creator of Seinfeld, and he is the star of the very long-running show, a lot of breaks in between, Curb Your Enthusiasm. He also played Bernie Sanders on SNL during the elections, I think both of them. And with me today to talk about Larry David is Malcolm Kellner. Malcolm Kellner is the creator of Making Malcolm, the web series, and the co-host of Two Woke Boys podcast. That's two with two O's. Malcolm, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Why Two Woke Boys?
Yeah, so the Two Woke Boys came about last year. Our podcast started around a year ago. And basically out of a lot of reasons that came from, one is boredom. My buddy, Jeff and I, Jeff Zenisek, who's a great comedian. We were bored in quarantine. We didn't have stand up to perform live anymore, really anywhere in person. So we're like, how about we start a podcast? Except the podcast started as like, we were going to do a parody of a podcast. But then we started recording like little bits and clips and sketches of this podcast. And Jeff was like, I think we could do this for like a full hour. I'm like, I don't know about that. that seems like a lot, because we're in character. So with this podcast, the Two Woke Boys, we each play characters. I play this character that I've done for a couple of years. His name is Cole, C-O-L. So you already know he's a pretentious douchebag. And the character is a slam poet. Cole is, and then Jeff's character is named Chris Columbus, and his so that's part of it, right? That's part of the joke, is he, so yeah, it's the Two Woke Boys. We hate that he's named Chris Columbus, and he hates his heritage and everything like that. He as a descendant of the real Chris Columbus, he's ashamed. But yeah, so his character is a former comedian who quit to become a full-time activist. And he's just one of these people you see on your Instagram feed. It's like, they're always posting stuff out and about. And it's like, do they have, like, there's no way that person has a job. Like, they can't be taking all these trips and doing all these things. And yeah, it's because his dad is like a billionaire, the character, of course. So these characters are just horrible, detestable people who do this podcast as the Two Woke Boys. The whole thing is like, these characters are essentially wearing a costume. They are wolves in sheep's clothing, terrible people wearing this costume of like feminism and being a male ally and great virtuous person in order to just pick up chicks, essentially. And so that's the Two Woke Boys. So yeah, it's a full-length podcast. You can check it out everywhere. But where was that? Man, that was a long tangent. You asked me about the Two Woke Boys. So we've been doing that for about a year, the full-length podcast, for more like, not quite the full year, maybe 8 months, 8-9 months. But yeah, it's been a fun little pandemic activity.
Yeah, I love the premise, because it definitely it maps onto some truth when it comes to people and their motivations.
Right. Right.
I did you hear about this guy? Well, this happened, you know, I'm sure there are like several iterations of this, but there's this really famous, I don't know if it was Black Bottom Text or some other person, but they were doing activism, and I think they were like doing it through a queer lens. And it turns out that their father was this pretty like medium-sized like political figure.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, then it came about where it's like, how come you know, you kept doing these what do you call the crowdsourcing,
like a Kickstarter or GoFundMe or whatever?
Yeah. Why do you keep doing these GoFundMes when you're like clearly well off?
Right.
And then they tried for a while to fight off those claims about, you know, having any sort of wealth, and then eventually they just left with a good amount of money, I would say.
Yeah, no, it's just funny, like the amount of like grifting that takes place amongst these people who claim to be you know, so well meaning. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I'm like a liberal guy, you know. I'm not mega over here, but it's just funny to me some of the hypocrisy that that I see, and my, you know, my co-host Jeff and I see in like these left circles of these people who clearly they're doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, they're not wearing a shirt that says the future is female to because they care about women's rights. They're doing it to try to get girls, you know. So that's what we're making fun of, are these fake male feminists who are in it for the wrong reasons. So
yeah, and I like that. You know, in watching your clips, which you have available on your Instagram, right?
Yeah, I've posted some of the stuff on my personal page as well. Yeah, and so we do, like, we've done started getting into the whole TikTok stuff recently, because Jeff's TikTok has been blowing up. He has close to 200,000 followers now, just from his stand-up clips, because he's an excellent stand-up comedian. But we've been doing these TikToks in character as the Two Woke Boys, where it's different variations of solicitations to women that we're trying to lure. So yeah, that's been fun. We had a video within the past couple of days on Jeff's account that it's up to like 1.5 million views and counting. So that's thank you. So yeah, that's been an exciting little boost to the podcast.
That's awesome. Would you mind telling me more about Making Malcolm and where people can watch?
Yeah, definitely. So Making Malcolm is a web series that I created a couple years ago. It's about, it's loosely based on my own life as someone who has moved to LA with aspirations of making it in acting and entertainment and stuff. But the character of Malcolm, I play the exaggerated version of myself in the show. So it's basically taking a lot of things that have happened to me in my real life and kind of heightening them and exaggerating them. And the character of Malcolm is basically just like me with less social awareness, less, I guess, just a little dumber than me in real life, and just gets himself into some bad situations and has very bad luck and can't seem to get out of his own way. So just kind of it's kind of like a comedy of errors. This guy who's clueless, trying to make it in LA and there's a lot of interesting side characters as well. His roommate, Malcolm's roommate, is like this guy who he's not like full on incel white supremacist, but he like hints at those things, which is, it poses a conflict with Malcolm, because Malcolm, the character Malcolm, is Jewish, as I am as well. So there's this weird dynamic with the character, the roommate character, who might be a big anti-Semite. And the villain of the show is this guy who pretends to be a homeless man, but may not actually be homeless, who's also an actor as well. There's only been two episodes so far, working on the third one, but it's just been a fun little outlet for me and some friends of mine to perform and get our stuff out there, make people laugh. And that's what it's all about. So yeah, you can check that out. It's on my YouTube page, or if you just search Making Malcolm on YouTube, it should come up, or put in my name, Malcolm Kellner, and it's the top thing on my channel. So.
Hell yeah, dude. I commend you for self-producing. That's such a big,
yeah, it's big tough. Task. I put like, it's tough both in terms of like the labor it takes, but also financially, like it adds up. Like, I put like all my money into these first two episodes. And I mean, I'm glad I did at the end of the day. It's, I feel like it was worth it, and happy with how they turned out, especially the second one. If you watch both episodes, you'll see a noticeable upgrade in production quality from the first to the second. But yeah, it's fun just getting my being able to create content myself instead of just like, because I feel like so much of being an actor out here or comedian or whatever writer is like waiting for someone to come to you with the perfect role or perfect opportunity. But something I'm a big believer in is just like putting out your own stuff So instead of waiting for the perfect role for me, I wanted to write it myself. So it was a lot of fun to make these first two episodes, hoping to do a third and final episode too. I'm thinking of wrapping it up after this third episode, but yeah, check out the first two if you want. I think you'll enjoy them.
Oh, dude, thanks. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm happy. Like, because isn't that the suggestion that you would give everyone trying to be an actor? Like, don't wait, make
absolutely yourself. Yeah, whether it's an actor, writer, comedian, anyone in like the entertainment realm, it's I think it's all about making your own stuff. And I mean, like, you're doing that with the podcast here. You know, I do that with my own podcast, The Two Woke Boys, which we talked about, and the web series. And yeah, because like some of the people I really look up to in the industry have been people who have done exactly that. They created success for themselves by making their own content, like the Always Sunny guys. You know, that started off as a pilot they did for $20 or whatever the story was with, you know, those three guys. And then look what it's become now. Same thing with like the Broad City Girls, Abby and Alana. You know, they did their little web series in New York, did a great job with it. And soon enough, they have a huge show. And so like people like that, I really admire people who just, they have a vision and they make it happen. And if you create good stuff, then people will notice. So.
Yeah. So we met at your show that you were hosting with Jack Daniel Melanson.
Yes, we did. We did. First time, I don't know about you, but that was my first time performing in almost a year. It was like 11 months. First time performing live stand up. So,
yeah, live.
Yeah. Had you done? Yeah, was that your first show after a big break too, or?
Yeah, I would tell myself, okay, I should do one Zoom show every 2 weeks or so. I mean, every 2 months or so, because you know I need to do it. And for a while, there's like this outside mic at Dow Comedy Studio in Koreatown. So I did that until the new orders came in. So I went there maybe four times, but that was like around September or so, November, and then. But yeah, I was so happy to do that.
Yeah, show. It was a fun show.
Yeah, I was like, I felt like a dog who was just like released from his
Yeah, and you did a great job. You had a great set. It was my first time seeing you, of course, and seeing you perform. You were very funny, and yeah, it was cool. Glad Jack, our mutual friend Jack, brought us together and put on that show, and hopefully we do more shows there in his backyard, because he's got a nice little venue for outdoor comedy.
That was a nice little setup, especially with all the
right. Yeah, that was that was a little obstacle to my set in particular. I recorded it, and I was watching it back, and you know, for most of it, it's just like I couldn't hear it at all, and I'm like. And yeah, not ideal for comedy to have chainsaws going right next door. But you know, what can you do?
How long have you been doing stand-up?
I've been doing stand. The first time I got on stage was 2018, but I haven't been doing. It hasn't been like it didn't start being like a consistent thing that I was actually like trying at. Until or like doing regularly until 2019. So it's been, I'd say, you know, between 2 or 3 years. It's also tough counting, like, how do you count this past year, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, does that count when we weren't performing in person? I also did a few Zoom shows. Those are, I don't know about you, but a little demoralizing personally.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you do the show, you get your laughs, and then you go to your room, and you're like,
yeah.
Did I do comedy?
Right.
Did I imagine that? I don't.
It's very weird. It is not how stand-up comedy is meant to be performed, of course. But I mean, I commend people for adapting and doing what it takes to work on their craft, you know, when there's limited other options. So,
well, one of the reasons that I was asking you, like, how long you've been doing stand-up was because, for listeners who weren't at that show, right?
Yes.
Which is most of you, there was a chainsaw going off, and, like, you can tell who the newer comics were, not just because of the material, but because of how they reacted to the chainsaw.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, that. Yeah. I did. And for me, I was like, I was like so oblivious to it at first because I was just like, oh God, I haven't performed in almost a year. Here we go. Here's my set. And then someone from the back yelled out like, hey, we actually can't hear you. And,
oh yeah, that was with your set. And you were doing well.
I appreciate that.
Well.
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. But yeah, it was a little distracting for sure. Hopefully the next show we do there will not have the chain. Why were they chainsawing at like 7 at night on a Sunday? Like how random is that? But
yeah. Oh yeah. So, for that show, it was a great show. And yeah, both you and Jack did really well. I remember when I heard the chainsaw, I was like, I'm going to fight the chainsaw with my voice. So I would lean away from the mic and just talk a lot.
Oh, more. Okay.
So, anyways, dude, so you've been doing comedy you've been doing stand-up for just a few years. But you've got the stage presence, you know, you're there. So that's good.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's something that I'm not like, there's people who go up and are just like naturals, natural comedians with stand up. They're like good right away. I am not that person. I look back on tapes of my first like year plus doing stand up. And it's like, oh man, like I cringe so hard. I'm like, oh, this is so bad. But so I'm not one of those people who can just get up there and kill right away. It's been a grind, but I feel like I'm okay now. I've gone from very bad to okay at stand up, and so hopefully I keep doing it. And
can you tell us, me, about your first joke, your first bit, your first character, whatever?
Yeah. So in terms of my first joke, like my first time on stage, I would try doing like impressions and stuff. And and I mean, I'm okay at them, but it was more just like, here's my Trump impression, here's my Bernie impression, here's my Obama impression. And I mean, there's a lot of great like impressionist comics, but I feel like that's not really, I don't really see that as like my lane. So like that's what I did like the first few times I went on stage is doing impressions of different people. But it's not really something I've kept in my act, so to speak, but this character of Cole that I do on the Two Woke Boys, that's been something that's been in the works for a couple years, and I've done shows, not like stand-up shows, but I've done like variety shows where I go as Cole and do slam poetry, but of course all the poet, like it's not real, it's like all it's a joke. but and I've done it only at shows where like people know that it's a joke, like they know that it's a character. But what I want to do, something I would really love to do as things open back up here, is go to go to shows like poetry nights or something like that, where they have people doing like real serious deep poetry. Oh. And then I go as Cole and just with my and just see what happens, because like I posted all the poems I've done in the character on my social media, like YouTube and Instagram and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it's all very ridiculous. Not to give away too much, but basically each poem ends with like a plea for women to please give me attention, because that's what the two woke boys are all about. So I would love to take that to a show where like they don't know that it's a joke. They're not in on the joke, and just see what happens. Yeah. So I'm sorry, that was an extremely long roundabout answer to your question, but
yeah, it was you were doing impressions, which is, you know, I think it's a legitimate tenable start to stand up. Yeah. Can we hear a little bit of the Bernie? Just a little bit, just a tiny bit before we go to break.
Joe, it's good to be here on this podcast. We have a lot of work to do in this country. We have a time where the top 1% of the top 2% of the top 1% control 85% of the wealth in this country, and I think that is unacceptable.
So that's a little Bernie. Thanks.
That was good.
I was not good. Not expecting to do it, but
66% of our listeners are males. 33% are of females. 0% of them not giving me any play.
Right. And ladies out there, hit Joe up. He needs it.
Hey, so we're about to listen to a word from our sponsor, which is Anchor. And we're going to hear the Larry David monologue. Stick around.
Ladies and gentlemen, Larry David.
Me. You really, really tolerate me. Look at this. What a wonderful greeting. What a beautiful greeting. Anyway, it's nice to be in New York. You know, I used to live here for many years and I had nothing. I was a total loser. In fact, I used to walk around outside looking for spots to live for when I became homeless. Once I found a spot with a ventilator with heat coming out, I thought, oh my God, I've struck gold. I gotta put a deposit down on this place. For a while, I was a private chauffeur for an old woman who was kind of blind. She was blind as a bat, let's face it. I cannot say enough wonderful things about the blind boss. You can really get away with murder, you know. The car was filthy. There was bird poop all over it. She had no idea. You know, I didn't date much at that time, and I was very desperate. Yet, I was also very particular. It's an odd combination, you know. I had that in common with Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, who, like me, also had nothing to offer, and yet was extremely, extremely particular, very superficial. He had to go out with the best-looking woman in Paris. Nobody else was good enough for Quasimodo. His friends would try to fix him up. Quasi is a great girl in my office, lovely girl. Wonderful personality. She's a gifted pianist, a gourmet chef. I think you two would really hit it off. Is she good-looking? She's got to be good looking. Is she good looking? Quasi, listen to me. I told her about the hump. She's cool with the hump. And I told her how hideous your face is and how deformed and grotesque you are. You know what she said? I don't care. It's fine. You know, who cares about all that stuff? It's all superficial. As long as he's nice to me, that's what's important. Does she have big jugs? I like me some big jugs. Can I have big ones? Listen to me. You're a mutant. You're a monster. You're a freak. You're not going to fix me up with some dog. The big difference... that's so good. The big difference in dating now is that I used to keep a condom in my wallet. Now I just have a little booklet listing which fish have the highest mercury content. Really cool guy. You want to seal the deal? Whip out that little booklet at a dinner. Oh, hey, look at this. We can get the flounder, huh? Who else can tell you to get flounder? Do I take care of you or what? I think I'm doing quite well. So, you know, a lot of sexual harassment stuff in the news of late, and I couldn't help but notice a very disturbing pattern emerging, which is that many of the predators, not all, but many of them, are Jews. And I have three words to say to that. Oy vey shmir. I don't like it when Jews are in the headlines for notorious reasons. I want Einstein discovers the theory of relativity. Salk cures polio. What I don't want? Weinstein took it out. I know I consistently strive to be a good Jewish representative. When people see me, I want them to say, oh, there goes a fine Jew for you. There's a fine Jew. Margaret, come here. Come here. I want you to meet this wonderful Jew. Nothing stereotypical about him. If not for the self-deprecation and the irritable bowel syndrome, you'd never know in a million years. You know, I've always been obsessed with women, and I've often wondered, if I'd grown up in Poland, when Hitler came to power and was sent to a concentration camp, would I still be checking out women in the camp? I think I would, you know? Hey, Shlomo, look at that one over there by Barrett Say. Oh, my God, is she gorgeous? Oh, I've had my eye on her for weeks. Yeah, I'd like to go up and say something to her. Of course, the problem is, there are no good opening lines in a concentration camp. How's it going? They treating you okay? You know, if we ever get out of here, I'd love to take you out for some latkes. You like latkes? What? What'd I say? Is it me or is it the whole thing? It's because I'm bald, isn't it? Anyway, we got a great show tonight. Miley Cyrus is here. Stick around. We'll be right back.
damn, dude.
Yes.
That's good stuff.
Yes.
Malcolm. How come you chose this monologue?
So I chose this because it's one of my favorite sets of all time, because I'm a huge Larry David basically is the kind of like, without him, I don't know if I'd even be pursuing a career in like comedy and entertainment. I just have such a love for Curb and Seinfeld and him as a person. And just like his style of humor is just so funny to me, and the cringiness of it. And that's why, like, it's interesting him as like a stand-up comedian. He never reached like nearly the same heights that he did as a writer. And it's interesting because like his stuff, it's so like his humor is so awkward and so cringy, and that doesn't always play in stand-up. And like some of his jokes he was making in this SNL one, it was like you could hear the groans from the audience because it's so painful. But to me, I love that. And I've never tried getting like too cringy, like intentionally cringy with my stand-up act. I try to just keep it, keep people laughing and not groaning. But I just love that Larry has the balls to like go certain places that others don't, and just really make edgy jokes. And he actually took a lot of heat for making like those Holocaust jokes in this set. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm a firm believer that like any person in a minority group should be able to make fun of their people, you know, or make fun of things that have happened to their people.
I agree.
You know, if
you mind talking about this?
Sorry. I jumped the gun.
No, it's fine. That's good. That means you want to talk about it. I've heard a lot of legend about his stand-up. I've rarely seen any footage, but I've heard things like, you know, him coming on stage and looking around the crowd after he's been introduced and going, never mind.
I've heard the same thing. And yeah, that's like a well-documented thing that he would do from time to time, because he would really like, when he would bomb, he really took that personally. And so if he saw a situation where it's like, these people aren't going to appreciate what I do, like I'm not going to bother. And that's just, it just adds to the legend of Larry.
I so wholeheartedly agree with this sort of sentiment where it's like, no, that's the joke. That joke's perfect. Why aren't you laughing? That joke, there's no other way to tell it. I told it perfectly, and I don't understand what's wrong. You like getting mad at the audience is like a real feeling.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
I contemplated at the show when like some of the jokes that I wanted I wanted them to hit a little differently. When they didn't hit that well, I wanted to do that. I was like, what? Right. You guys been inside too long? I love the intro to this set, right? The reference to the Sally Fields thing in the Oscars, you know, when she goes, "You like me, you really like me." And then that later gets brought up in the Mask movie where he goes, Jim Carrey playing the mask goes, right, "You love me, you really love me." Right. And then Larry David's like, "You tolerate me, you really tolerate me."
Yeah, no, it's classic LD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he's good at subverting your expectations, and he's really good at like setting up a joke and just not even bothering to hear right. any laughs for the punchline.
Right. Yeah. He's he's a genius. I really think I love that set so much, and just how like uncomfortable it got in the room. It's just like, I love guys who can do that. Larry, yeah, I love I love like guys who have mastered the art of cringe. You know, Larry is one. Sacha Baron Cohen is another with all his stuff. So uncomfortable. But it's just.
Yeah, because he's able to like get like lend himself his star power from Seinfeld and from Curb being so wildly successful. And people want to hear what he's saying, even if he's literally saying, I don't really care if you have fun or not right now, because I want to have fun. He talks about the growing up in New York and like people thinking he was a loser and like growing up to be a loser. And like, you know, you hear this often in different interviews where, you know, he would be walking around saying like if he ended up homeless, oh, he should like live there in scouting spots. And like, this isn't really a joke, but he's just talking about his life and how like if, you know, once he came across a ventilator with heat coming out of it, and he's like, oh, yeah, I should probably put a down payment on that. Then this other thing that wasn't a joke. Where he goes, you know, I was a private chauffeur for a blind woman. And right now I'm trying to get through these earlier jokes. We can talk about the more like tension building jokes that I think you want to talk about. So the private chauffeur thing, you know, let's face it. That's pretty easy or whatever. Not really a joke.
Right.
But people love hearing.
Right. Yeah. It's not a classic setup punchline type of thing. It's just an observation. It's basically just a premise, but the premise is just very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good way to put it. He didn't date much.
Right.
But he was still very, very particular. And I think this is where I think like guys can just relate in general. Cause much of what I feel like is the incel community is just dudes who don't want to lower their standards, right, to what they believe to be like. They want to date up. And I feel like a lot of these guys just need to face.
Yeah, that's an interesting, interesting theory that I think could be pretty accurate.
Or it's me projecting. Anyways, so he brings that up and then he talks, he likens it. So here's a move. He's like, this is the thing that I feel, but let's talk about a more popular cultural icon where that also reflects the sort of property that I'm attributing to myself, you know, being kind of ugly and being very particular at the same time. Quasimodo. And it's very funny because this is where he gets very like the act out is very character-y, right? The hunchback. Where he's like, oh, you know, she has to be hot. She's like the hottest girl in Paris. But yeah, I didn't. That was fun. That was a great observation.
Yes. It's been a while since I was familiar with the hunchback of Notre Dame story, but yeah, I guess that is what it is, right? This hunchback who only wanted the finest things, even though he was a hunchback.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I think here there's a legitimate punchline, like a very sincere, very Larry David punchline, where he goes, the friend of Quasimodo who's trying to set him up goes, look, I told you about the hump. Right. She's okay with the hump.
Right. That's classic Larry. You could also easily hear Jerry saying that too. You know, that's a line that either of them could say.
Yeah,
and it's just so authentically them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can hear sort of echoing in all of Seinfeld.
Right.
Like, in all of Costanza's lines, yeah. He's okay. Then, like, you know, okay, he waits a moment. There is like he gets the laughter, right? Then he goes back to being the quasi thing, right? Where he's like, oh, but does she have big boobs, right? And like from a technical standpoint, he only does the quasi bit two times, right? You know, rule of three. You don't have to adhere to it, but whatever.
Mm.
He only does the quasi thing twice, and then after. He does his final joke with the Quasimodo bit, he doesn't wait for a laughter. He just goes right on to the next subject. Like, yeah, which is like, there's a big difference now with my dating. Right? Before I used to have condoms in my wallet. Now I have like a right sheet with all the different mercury content for fish.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about the laugh.
Yeah, no, it's so great how he just, yeah, like you said, just totally subverts what you'd expect.
Yeah, then he goes, I think I'm doing quite yeah well.
Which yes, is, yes.
He breaks the fourth wall.
Love that.
And he gets
the
applause break.
Yeah, no, they, he's just so, I mean, because that's what his, like, or like the character of Larry David is all about. It's just like saying the unsaid, saying the things that usually go unsaid. So like he as the character, which he's essentially being in his stand-up act, is like, you know what? I think I'm doing well. I'm just going to say it. Even though like a comedian would never say that, like, you know, this is going well. It's just like something they would never, only he would say something like that.
Dude, I want to talk about that very briefly, where it's like, I don't know if, do you share this feeling where like, okay, if you've been writing comedy for a while, if you've been doing like stand up for a while or improv, I think socially you get more slack when it comes to subject matter if you can show that you're a good writer or a good comic. Where it's like, okay, that's like, it's almost like society's like, okay, there have to be some people who like talk about it, so this person seems to be this seems to be their profession talking about it. Like like, you know what I mean, like, you know, like in writers' rooms, right? Mm-hmm. You like, for example, Blackish. There are often times where it's like, oh, grandpa, you can't say that. That's racist now, or that's racist against Asian people, right? But there's still a group of writers in the writer's room who had to come up with the racism that later gets like pushed back by like the younger, more like morally correct character, you know? But I feel like society doesn't want to hear what's been being said behind closed doors. And like Larry David is one of these guys who brings, you know, the writer's room to the forefront.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I agree.
Do you ever feel like you don't get cut slack as a
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't. I haven't I don't have the same like slack built up as someone of like, I mean, he has said that like the character of Larry David in Curb is like a fantasy of his, like of how he wishes he could respond in a social situation by just like totally calling it out and not caring about the social norms. So I mean, like, I mean, same here. Yeah. I wish I could be like that sometimes, but but no, I'm usually pretty. I don't usually get too crazy out in public unless I'm around you know, close friends where we're all doing that. But yeah, no,
dude. Even after doing comedy for years, My close friends will be like, all right, Joe, let's ease up, right? I recently was on House Party. They're not a sponsor.
I think so, yeah.
It's a good app. House Party, are you familiar? Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, it's an application where you like video call people and you can play an assortment of games through the calling app. And we're doing trivia, and it was like Black History Month trivia. And it was like one of the questions was, where was Barack Obama born? Right. And then to myself, I go, well, out loud, I go, where's Kenya? Right. As one of the options. And then my friend who is,
right,
you know, obviously, right,
you're being satirical with that answer.
Yeah. And then my friend goes, Joe, we can't say that, right? And I'm like, what do you mean we can't say that? I mean, you can't say that, one, because you're very white. I'm not, right? And also, I've done the work. I'm doing the labor, and that's like it's a simple, nice, little, decent joke, right? That's
right.
That mocks the right. Breather movement.
It's satire, which I love personally. And yeah, no, it's so funny that someone would say you're not allowed to make a satirical joke like that. I'm on your side here, Joe.
Good. Perfect. This is what this podcast is going to become. Me bringing people on to agree with like these minor injustices that I believe have occurred against me. All right. And then, do you want to talk about the how he sets up the, the Predator bit?
I love the pause there, just milking that pause for so long, and then just the awkwardness of him being like, they're Jews, and just the the cringe thing he does. And I mean, it's just classic Larry, just bringing attention to something that, and like, that's something when he did that joke, I was like, he was saying what I had thought before, because like me as a Jewish guy myself, it's like I hate seeing, you know, these names like Weinstein and like Brett Ratner or whatever, and like these Jewish guys. It's like, come on, you're making a bad name for us here. And and Larry just going and calling it out like that, and in just classic Larry form, was just so perfect, funny and cringy, and just great.
Yeah, because like, I'm sure there were like moments when the audience was like, oh, you're being anti-Semitic, right? And it's like, no, there's like it's a genuine concern that I would share too. Like, I'm a Latino, right? So if I see stuff like that in the media, I'm like, damn,
right? That makes and yeah, bad. No, I think it's a thought that every minority group has had, you know, at some point. It's like, you know, they want like they don't like it when one of their people is messing things up for the rest of them. And Larry just called that out so perfectly. And, you know, I loved what he's joking about, like, you know, striving to be a good Jewish representative. It's just so funny. And you were saying like some of the audience might think like it's anti-Semitic. Well, you know, I do think if you're part of a minority group, you should be able to make jokes about your people.
Especially
right,
if it's
exactly.
Like
an
internal critique.
A critique is what it was. And I saw nothing wrong with it. I guess I could see how others would take umbrage to it, take offense to it. But I mean, that's what Larry does. He calls out the things that that usually go unsaid.
Yeah. And he does it, I think he did it very tactfully. And there's a lot of humor there. Then in that case, do you want to set up the bit where he's talking about, like, you know,
yeah,
always been obsessed with women?
Just the the analogy type joke he does with talking about hitting on women in a concentration camp in the Holocaust. It's just so it's obviously so uncomfortable and so such a tough thing to joke about. But again, I think if you're Jewish, you can do that. Because something important here is that, like, I have been lucky enough to know many different Holocaust survivors. Unfortunately, most have since passed away, including one guy I met
I got to know very well as part of like a high school project. I got to meet this guy, learn his story, and find out everything he went through. And, you know, he was in Auschwitz and lost every member of his family besides one sister that he reunited with later. Everyone else was killed in the camps. But you know what he said is how he and the other survivors like got through it was by jokes, by joking with each other and just joking about the situation. And because, you know, if they weren't joking, they would have given in to the horror of the situation. So that's how they kept their spirits up. That's how they kept their hope alive. And so it's like if people try to say, especially if like, I mean, if a non-Jewish person is saying like you can't joke about the Holocaust, like who are you to tell Larry David, a Jew, that he can't joke? Like Larry is like the goat Jew, you know, and he's on our Mount Rushmore. It's him, maybe Mel Brooks, Albert Einstein, and I don't know, Drake is the fourth. No, there's certainly more important, figures than, you know, the entertainment people. But no, Larry is he's just such a, so beloved amongst like the Jewish community and myself included, of course. And it's like, who are you to tell him that he can't joke about the Holocaust, especially as someone too, like, I mean, he's older. I'm sure he had family that was relatives that were killed or survived. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be shocking if he didn't. So that's how they got through. That's how the survivors got through it. And I think that legacy, that's such a big part of Jewish humor. I'm sorry, I'm rambling at this point, but just like Jewish humor, it's all about poking fun at our like misfortune and self-deprecation. And so it's just truly in the spirit of that. And I saw no problem with it myself.
I agree. I think that's, I think everything you said is very, very clear. And, it is something like, you know, these sort of jokes that you would make within your own sort of group are now public. And so I think the fear is that like that other people will use that.
I get that. I get that point of view for sure. But
do you remember the joke that I said early in my set about the why not kind of the highest COVID rate?
Trying to remember that one. It's
because I think I know why. It's because Latino moms keep watering down.
That was great. And I mean,
which like it
that's a great joke that you are perfectly allowed to make as someone in that community. You know, if I were to start saying like stuff about like super specific stuff about Mexicans or Latinos in general that was like coming from that like wasn't well done and coming from a good place, it'd be like, okay, what are you doing? And as it should be, you know, but.
Yeah, like if you said that joke that I just said, like one, I'd be like, oh, that's a perfect joke. But also, I'd be
it's a combination. There's a lot of factors that go into joking about you know, a certain group of people, and that's why I don't like really doing it unless it's something. Unless it's pretty like harmless. But But yeah, except if, I mean, I do like making jokes about, you know, my own people, about the Jewish community and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think as you are allowed to make jokes about your people, how you see fit.
Yeah, believe it or not, after like 22 episodes of doing this podcast, I don't think we have talked about that sort of that part of it, of doing, of making jokes. So I'm glad we're having the conversation, and like,
yes. And yeah, it got a lot of Larry got a lot of heat, for it from a lot of like Jewish groups too. But I guess they have to say that, but you know, but I think I'm on team Larry here 100%. I think he is completely completely in line with the jokes he made.
And I'm going to support you in your position because I don't think I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, yeah, there's,
now that you mentioned it.
There's certain like, and it's not like, and I'm not saying you have to be like, you are not allowed to make jokes about another group of people besides your own, but it just has to be, it has to be funny. And it has to be like, in my opinion, yeah, it has to be funny at the end of the day, but also not like hateful. And there's a line, if the joke is coming from a good place or not, I think. And yeah, I've seen some jokes about when people making fun of like other races or religions that just don't, and like, that just didn't really do it for me, you know, because of a combination of things. It's not funny, or it's just like mean spirited. But yeah, I mean, it takes a lot to get like, for me to be like, quote unquote, offended. It doesn't really happen for me. I don't get like offended too easy, but yeah, there's,
you know, when I was like, yeah. I grew up watching Comedy Central and Comedy Central specials.
Yes.
And I grew up in Highland Park before it became like super gentrified. So it was a bunch of Latino people. And so like one of the few windows I had into other cultures was through stand-up, right? And I remember one of my first jokes at 9 years old, like one of my own original jokes, because I was like, oh, I see the sort of differences in cultures through, like, as perceived through these jokes.
Please,
if you don't mind me telling you this very early crude joke, it is about Jews. It's like, I once saw a 7 foot tall Jewish man, but then he stepped off his wallet. And I was 9 years old when I came up with that. And then I remember remembering that like later and being like, oh shit. Oh crap. How many people did I tell that to? And I need to talk.
That's not a bad joke. And I mean, yeah, it's I'm cool with jokes. You know, a lot of you don't have to be Jewish to make jokes about Jews, but then there's a certain line where you get. Do you know this guy? What's his name? Sam Hyde. You heard of this guy? Yeah, and not that I want to be shouting this guy out, he got a show on like Adult Swim. But then they canceled it, and he really leaned into like being alt-right. And he has stand-up I've seen online where he's just like blatantly denying the Holocaust and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, like that's, you know, that's not comedy. That's just like straight up hate speech. And and there's certainly a line there, I think. But yeah, I don't think there's any rule book on this, but I think the public is usually a pretty good, comedy audiences are usually pretty good judges of, you know, is this funny? Is this within the line?
Yeah, you hope that an audience will regulate the sort of material that a person has in virtue right. of them right. not responding well to
yeah,
the joke.
So, and yeah, and I'm a pretty yeah. firm believer in, like, you should, like, in, yeah, audience, you should leave it up. It should be the audience's choice at the end of the day. If they like what you do, you should do it. You know, as long as it's not, I don't believe in, you know, being hateful
yeah.
To anyone or to any group of people. But yeah, it's an interesting balance for sure.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's also, you know, I think this will be, we're very close to the end. But I think it's very telling of how creative a person is in comedy if they constantly battle to be able to say certain things. Like, if they're constantly saying, like, oh, come on, how come I can't say that? How come I can't, like, say this thing that seems politically incorrect? It's like the same people who fight to right. say the N-word, even though they're not black or whatever. Right? It's like, dude, why is this a hill you want to fight on? Like, why or die on? Why is it so important that you say this joke? Like, come up with other material. And it's like, you know, some people lack so much imagination that they're willing to fight for this really, like, shock value sort of material. Instead of listening yes. to other people and then maybe just
that's a great point.
Jokes.
Yeah, it's yeah, it seems like being like overly edgy is like some people think that's like a substitute for being funny, like being or being like overly quote unquote offensive. Is like a substitute for like a good, well-written joke, and it's not. And yeah, it's like you shouldn't need to yeah. Have to say the N-word as a not a black person to. I mean, having said that, of course, there obviously I'm sure you've seen like the George Carlin bit where he says it, and the Louis C.K. bit, and yeah, those. yeah, but yeah, time. And that's a conversation for another day. But yeah, like for me, it's like, did you ever see that that like round table of Chris Rock and Sein? Yeah, and I'm kind Chris of Rock, on
Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Jerry's. I agree with Jerry in that on that table. It's you know, I don't see the humor in myself, someone like myself using that word. And it's so I'm not going to do it. So, yeah. Yeah, that was a really interesting thing that like resurfaced a couple years ago, right after, I mean, that was from several years ago. But then it resurfaced on Twitter and people were talking about, you know, Ricky Gervais and Louis C.K. saying it and Chris Rock kind of going along with it. But Jerry was saying, yeah,
yeah.
No, I'm not going to say that. I don't see the humor in it. And I totally, I'm on, yeah. on his side in that one, but yeah, that's just me personally. So.
I'm gonna edit all of that, so it yeah. sounds like you are in favor of it.
Just
sorry,
I'm gonna be I'm gonna be listening to this podcast so horrified. You've chopped and screwed it up to just
oh, yeah.
make me look so racist.
Yeah, I'm gonna put this part in.
Just
the,
lead
in the
with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we covered it. And just at the very end, he again does not wait for laughter. When he goes, right. Is it because I'm bald? Is it the bald thing? Yeah. But yeah, dude. Any
on the set
on this?
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was vintage Larry. It's not your typical stand-up set. It's not what you expect to see from a typical comic. It's not comfortable. It's very uncomfortable. It's very awkward, cringy. But there's like great nuggets of truth there. And that, like, yeah, like it's like, you know, us Jews don't like it when Weinstein was doing, you know, making a name for us, being in the Holocaust. Like, yeah, like, I guess I would wonder what I would say to girls in there. It's like these uncomfortable things that that no one wants to talk about, Larry does. And I thought it was very good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming on.
All my social media is just my name, Malcolm Kellner. I actually have on Twitter, it's shortened. It's just Melk, M-A-L-C. But everywhere else, if you just look up Malcolm Kellner, you'll find me. And on Twitter, yeah.
M-A-L-C? Oh, I wish it was M-A-L-K.
Well, you could have gotten some big butts
from that company, Melk.
That's like a
nut-based alternative dairy thing called Melk. Anyways, and then, you know, please check out the third and final possible installment of Making Malcolm.
Yes, and yes. Appreciate the shout-outs.
Anything coming up?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing too concrete as far as dates, but we release new episodes of the Two Woke Boys every week, so definitely check that out and check out our videos that we do in character on social media, and I think you'll enjoy them.
You know, I'm gonna announce this with you. And it's so like 80 minutes into the recording, but I'm thinking, you know, once it's a little safer and like I already got like the first part of the vaccine, I'm hoping to produce a live show where we have, you know, friends of the pod come on. So hopefully, I'll see you again on that show. You know, I don't know when that would be, but
yeah, I'd really appreciate that, man. Always happy to get up and perform, and I would be very very excited to do that. So sounds good.
I'm gonna have you and Jack do dueling mics. All right.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Joe. And appreciate it.